Yeah, fuck doing the show, Chris. I'm just going to go and drink some of this root beer.
Hard root beer.
You guys can do the show.
I never really could visualize how small New Jersey is until I was putting together a puzzle with my son Dylan, and we're putting all of the states in because he loves memorizing the states and the capitals.
And it was on one piece.
It's just this tiny little piece. You couldn't even fit the words on there. They had to have it off on the board.
Yep.
But speaking of New Jersey, fresh from the streets of New Jersey, Michael Dominic is joining us this week. Mike, welcome to User Air. It's good to have you.
Thank you, guys. How are you doing?
Mr. Dominic, we're fine, but let's not talk about us. We're so excited to have you on the show that I made you stop right before we started because of a story you were getting into. But go ahead, Beer. What is it?
Well, I was just going to say, I hear that Michael Dominic is graduating from New Jersey boy to Florida man.
He's going down to the swamps. So, Mr. Dominic, come on now. What's going on over there? Because you were getting into a great story, and I said, stop. Save it for the show.
Yeah, so good radio listeners will know, about a month and a half back, I leased a house in Florida.
Wow.
Little flag on the play there. The house was never available.
Now, wait a minute. Was it available at the time you leased it?
Nope.
So how do you lease a house that's not available, dude?
Well, it is what we would call a clerical error on the side of the company who manages these rental properties.
A clerical error.
Or in another way, a flat-out lie.
Because it seems like a house is kind of more than a clerical error. That seems like it's kind of like a $200,000, $300,000, you know, $500,000 asset that is either there or not there. It's available or not available.
Well, it's sort of a problem because now my house in New Jersey is being sold, and I have packed it up and sent it down on what they call cows.
To the house that doesn't exist?
No, to a storage facility in Tampa. Because obviously.
Because he has a house that doesn't exist.
Right.
So, wait a minute. You've sold the house that you live in, and you've already moved the stuff out, but there's no house for you to go to because there was a clerical error.
I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm homeless. I would say that I'm now a
living in a storage facility.
Are you living out of your office? Like, what are you doing? Or do you still have the office? Like, what's happening over there?
So here's the complication. On Sunday, I have a very expensive Amtrak ticket called the Auto Train down to Florida. So I'm going to go ahead and take that, and I'm going to be living with my mother-in-law. I won't say it's a hardcore downgrade, but other people might.
That is a clerical error. I'll say that. Damn, dude.
Yeah.
How you feeling? Are you all right? So did you pack up your work stuff, too? I mean, how are you doing? Are you making it through this?
So, yeah, that's the thing. I'm currently at my office right now. This will be my last day in my office. I'll have the office for a few more months, and I'll be back here probably in August for a couple days. But I'm living on a 13-inch MacBook Pro, and the USB-C lifestyle is surprisingly painful on the road because you can't plug anything into it.
No, you need a few dongles. You just need a few dongles, dude.
Yeah, but when you're living out of like a Calvin Klein briefcase that was handed down to you like 10 years ago, you don't have lots of compartments for dongles, considering you have shirts.
Well, you're just getting the wrong briefcase then.
Yeah, I know. I think I just need to buy like one of those, cloths.
Yeah, go down to the Apple store and pick yourself out a $200 bag.
You'll be fine. Get a satchel. Right.
Get one of those drug dealer briefcases that have tons of compartments everywhere.
For every dongle I could possibly need.
So this is an interesting situation. So the house moved pretty quick, though, didn't it, in New Jersey there? That seems like that went pretty quick.
Yeah, well, one of the advantages was I lived at the Jersey Shore. So it's not hard to sell a house here.
Sure.
Especially if you're selling it slightly under what it ought to sell for.
Yeah.
What was more surprising to me was being leased a house that didn't exist. I mean, that...
Now what I'm picturing for this to have had to take place, and correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe like you found it online and like submitted like an online form and then we got an email or like saw some listings online and then clicked like a rent button and put in credit card information and Bob's your uncle, you're good. Is that how you found this place? Or was there...
My guess is he went through an actual realtor that's just probably incompetent.
Correct. No, Noah's right. So
no beard.
The realtor failed to get the release from the current tenant that they were actually moving.
Oh, I see. So there was actually a house.
The house is physically there, right? The problem is that the landlord gives the tenant the right within 15 days of the termination of their lease to re-up it for a 25% monthly VIG.
What?
It's a great extortion racket, and they only do six-month renewals.
Is this a standard practice? This is some bullshit.
The people who own this house are owned by Blackstone Capital. I know this isn't Unfiltered, but...
Are you serious right now?
You might have heard of them.
Are you coming at me with this in the middle of a user error?
I'm coming at you. You asked the question. I am answering your question.
Only you, dude. Only. And let me guess, the ground security is provided by Blackwater? I mean, like...
Let's just say that I put a lot of money down and I don't have a house. And that's a problem.
Are you going to get the money back?
I have been promised another house that supposedly exists and is not occupied.
Of equal or lesser value? Yet,
you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of the airlines overbooking tickets on airplanes.
Oh, God.
Maybe they knew your travel history and was like, half the time this guy doesn't even go. I'm going to roll the dice and bet he doesn't. Like, they're quarter radio listeners, dude. And they rolled the dice on you and they're like, he's not going to make it.
Yeah, I think they, well, no, I think Noah's right. It's straight up incompetence, right? Because the real estate agent, obviously, she gets 10% of the annual lease, so she's really excited.
You know, your points are great, but I'm actually Rakai, not Noah.
Hold on. That's got to be the title.
It.
Noah is right. Hold on.
Okay, Noah. But I wish you were Noah.
Ah! Hold on.
Listen, I get that you're still a bit butthurt over the fact that I didn't edit stuff out that you didn't tell me to edit out. But
yeah, what is wrong with you?
Wow. The Coda Radio controversy is back.
and now I'm going after Blackstone Capital, and I'm just going to get killed by the end of the month here.
I know. Oh, yeah, I tell you what, Mike.
Listen, I'm from New Jersey. I understand you could end up in the back of a Cadillac pretty easily.
I don't understand how things just go so poorly for you when it comes to this. Like, Florida is, like, cursed for you in some ways. Like, getting there seems to be a challenge.
Getting there, staying there, not living in a swamp. All these things are problems for me.
He's going to get there. He's going to get a house, and he's going to get attacked by a gator.
You think so?
Yeah, I'm going to get eaten alive the day I get a house.
How are we going to be able
gator,
to podcast?
By a gator whose name will be Noah.
Are you going to be able to podcast from mother-in-law's house?
Well, my mother-in-law likes her streaming services, so luckily bandwidth should not be a problem.
Can I move in? Jeez, sometimes, man, I tell you what, I kill for some good internet.
It'd be nice to have somebody else paying for the Comcast bill.
Woo, I tell you what. Well, Mr. Dominic, I don't know what to make of all of this. This seems like and you got the kid, too? Like, holy smokes, this is a lot. This is a lot to deal with and run a business at the same time. I'm sure.
Yeah, and Noah's getting me arrested left and right with my incompetence. God damn it, Noah, what's wrong with you?
So how was lunch today? You have a good lunch?
Yeah, three beers. How was yours?
It was pretty good. Well, I'm having lunch right now, actually. I'm warming up, at least for Coda. This is our warm-up show for Coda Radio this week. So I have like this. I have this admission I have to make, and I've been struggling with it. And it's long, and it's drawn out, and it's not my dick. It is my hair. I've decided to grow my hair out. What do you guys think?
I feel like you should go the opposite route, shave it all off.
That was a thought, but then I was like, you know, I've always kind of wanted to be a hippie. I've always been a little judgmental of people that have these like crazy long like hair, like, you know, like man beauty hair, not like just growing hair, but like man beauty hair, like stylized man beauty
hair.
I'm
sorry, Chris.
So I decided to do it to change my perspective, and I've realized that this means a minimum, I think, of 6 months of awkward hair. So I'm like, I'm in the very early stages right now where there's nothing I can do with it. It's just, it's growing over my ears. It's poofing out like a baby mullet in the back a little bit. It's a shit show over here.
But now that you're not really on any video shows, who the hell cares?
That's kind of what I figured. Like, this is the time to do it. Like, I don't have my face on the Sunday morning show every Sunday, and I'm not on video for TechSnap anymore. Like, I have an opportunity here I'm still going to vlog, but I have an opportunity here to just be a little unkept. Seems like a time to go for it. Plus, it's not all gray yet. It's starting to go gray, but it's not gray yet. So, like, this is my last, these are my last few good years. I feel like.
So what
peak
you're
peak hair right now. I'm at peak hair, so I got to take advantage of it.
What you're saying is we have a few more years of, or a few more months of Elvis Chris?
Yeah. Is that what you think? Yeah. Would you say this is Elvis Chris?
Yeah. It gets significantly more Elvis as time goes on.
So are we talking like Alabama mullet here, or are we going full on milk?
What do you think, Beard? You got it. For me, I'm going Jesus. Yeah, I'm going Jesus. Yeah, I'm going. Oh, I'm going to have.
We're going
I'm going to have this long,
he's going beard.
Thick, I'm going to have this long, thick, dark hair, and it's going to be wavy as F, and you're going to want to run your hands through it every time you see, it. That's what I'm going for.
What you don't know, Mike, because you've probably never seen me, is that I have hair down to my ass, and Chris is envious, and he wants my hair.
That's what I got to do, is I got to grow out the beard, and I got to grow the hair out. And, you know, then really, I'll drop a bunch of weight, and I'll start posing as Jesus, and that'll be my new vlog character.
Nice.
Solid, daily vlogs with
solid
Jesus.
Idea.
Yeah. Also got to rename myself.
So one of the projects that we've brought up in the past, a Python audio visualizer, is almost finished. Well, their new release.
With tons of new features.
Yeah, well, they've basically just redesigned the entire GUI.
So quick recap, that's the open source application that we use to generate the waveform that you're seeing for User Air, Linux Action News, and now Late Night Linux is using it as well.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they essentially redesigned the GUI. They're building it so that it's more modular and you can add more things like future Project M support, which is probably what they're going to work on next. But they're looking for people for testing. So if you're interested, there will be a link in the show notes to the repo, and then you will have to select the feature new GUI branch and basically run that. It should be working essentially like the old one, except it's currently missing the command line functionality.
Well, they're working on that. Yeah, this is just a really handy open source tool to convert an audio file into some sort of nice video visualization to throw up on YouTube or even put on like your home media server. I think also they could use some help getting it over on Qt 5.
Yeah, they're looking for somebody that's experienced with Python and PyQt 5 to port it over from PyQt 4.
That would be really nice. That would be huge, actually.
Yeah.
Huge.
All right, so I have a little Linux axe to grind.
Lay it on us.
I am having some pretty annoying issues in GNOME 3.
Welcome to the club,
yeah,
man.
Hey, buddy. Tell us your pain, brother.
So I thought I'd be a little open-minded, right? I upgraded my Raytel, to 1704. And I said, you know what? Let me go with the GNOME spin of Ubuntu. So I'm just like going where the puck is going to
be,
right? So
I had that same thought process. Yep, I totally follow.
But had my initial experience with this machine been the way it is with GNOME 3, I likely would have returned it.
Whoa. He just crashed. He just dropped off the recording. He's gone. This is what happens to us, too. Oh, I'm sorry about that, Mike.
Oh, that's kind of amazing.
That's kind of unbelievable.
Real-time test.
Yeah, you know, this is what's been happening to us, too, is when the GNOME desktop crashes, Pulse crashes, and anything using Pulse dies. So
the best part was during my example of GNOME not working, it crashed Chrome.
Yeah, that happens if GNOME crashes. Sometimes anything that's using Pulse crashes, and then it's just a disaster. Yeah, it's a cast. It's like a domino effect.
So yeah, I'm not going to do it again. But the example was I dragged my Slack window on top of the Chrome window with Zencastr on it, and usually it would just sputter. In this case, it took both of them down.
Yeah. That jerk, that jerky motion.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean.
Yeah. That is – so that and something I've noticed on systems that have been running for about 20 days or more, which is actually pretty common here at the studio for them to run much longer. After about 15, 20 days, I have noticed that the entire shell slows down. And I don't need to rehash all this on the show. I've covered it in past episodes. And so I did some deep dive into what that was, and I found some issues that I think maybe are slightly design issues, but I recently saw that the Fedora project is actively working on long-term plans to improve the performance of GNOME, and in particular, Mutter, which is really at the core of what a lot of GNOME's issues, performance-wise, especially around rendering, are. So that there is a silver lining to the story. The problem is we're all sitting here in this boat right now going, shit, I just went all in on this, and
my long-term plan to improve the performance of GNOME is to use KDE.
Yeah, well, that's kind of it.
That's awful. So I remember, you know, Ubuntu 9.10 days, right? GNOME 2 was like very plain, but very, very fast and very smooth.
And now it's known as
what the hell happened?
Ubuntu Mate.
Yeah, Mate's still around. I mean, you could. I find it though. I find it to be a little
dated.
Well, no, I mean, they've done a good job of actually making it feel pretty modern. But like the interaction paradigm is dated, but it's dated in like a way that it's like fitting into a nice
it's pair classic.
Of shoes. Yeah, it's. But I still I can't quite put my finger on it, but it doesn't feel production grade completely to me. Still, it still feels on the fringe of production grade. And I know I'm going to hear a lot of people. That's just my personal feeling. I also I'm somewhat under the understanding that Canonical considered when they were dropping Unity 7, they had some serious considerations around the Mate project, especially because Ubuntu Mate is doing so well and it's really popular on the Pi and it's just a very practical, straightforward desktop. But I believe the conversation was is they thought there would be more work to get it production ready the way they saw it than there was for GNOME Shell. And I kind of concur. I think GNOME Shell is more production grade than Mate, but I
disagree completely.
And I think, I think most people would too. I think most people would. I think I'm pretty much in the minority there. But I think Mike and I are kind of eye to eye on these things. Mm-hmm. And so I think he probably mirrors how I would
see it. Really depends on your workflow, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean production ready? I mean, the fact that the scrolling sucks drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just, anything that feels like resistance to things moving fast, things where I can't fully quantify it. Like it's small, stupid things like the grab areas on the side of the windows are not efficient enough. There's so many little tiny things that add up for me that I end up going back to GNOME Shell.
But see, to me, that feels like small things that can be fixed easily, whereas GNOME Shell seems like it has fundamental issues that will take a long time to fix.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah.
Not to make a really oversimplified analogy that's going to get lots of crap on YouTube, but isn't this almost like iOS Android, right, where the Android system is architecturally not optimized for good animations and therefore will suck at animating large list views forever? And I don't know.
So what's the iOS in this, analogy?
Well, so remember, I had a big gap between using GNOME 2 and now just coming back to Linux, right?
Yeah,
so,
it is interesting. Yeah, because you went off in the Mac territory and then during the entire transition.
Yeah, all this crazy stuff about like HTML JavaScript extensions sounds insane to me. Just want to say that. And when I see performance issues, I don't know if this is correct. So please, people, before you like rip me apart on YouTube. Is like part of this system written in JavaScript? Like, is this not a native rendered, you know, OpenGL system? Because it feels like it's definitely not native performance. I know that's a gross oversimplification, but I'm literally doing this right now. I'm on the OpenSUSE webpage because I was going to troll Chris, and I'm scrolling it, and I'm watching Chrome tear. I am watching like the stupid little.
Yeah, some of that's X too. Some of that is X. And you can dig around in Chrome settings and turn on GL acceleration. But yeah.
Yeah, but see, these are things that you shouldn't have to do, right? If you're going to be the production-ready window manager for, you know, people just doing their job, right? That was my attraction to Unity as it began with. Like, I could just open it and it worked. And I could pop into VS Code, Vim, or whatever and do my work. Then all that stuff just has to work. It can't be like, oh, go into here and edit this config. And you know, it's not for people who like to play with computers, Chris.
Last.ting.com. Go to Ting and sign up for mobile that makes sense. Screw the duopolies. You know, we were talking about caps, and we were talking about different grandfathered plans that are trying to be worked out. Ting doesn't bother with any of that bullshit. It's simple, it's straightforward, pay for what you use. The line is $6, and then it's just your usage on top of that. If you're on Wi-Fi a lot, think about that for a second. I really want you to just take a look at Ting and consider changing things up a bit. You can save quite a bit of money, especially if you're just even a little savvy about these things. You download your podcast before you hit the road. You pin your music to your device. It's really not that complicated, and you can save a ton of money. And Ting has a GSM and CDMA network, so you can bring your own device or grab one from Ting, or just bring one and pop a SIM in there and you just grab a Ting directly. Just start by going to las.ting.com. Also, props to anybody in the comments who gives us a great idea for the new Ting URL for the show. still something that like I want to put out there. I'd love it to be an audience thing. Last.ting.com, go there, check them out, and get mobile that makes sense. No contracts, no termination fees, no hidden line items. Everything you expect from modern nationwide wireless with no contracts. Last.ting.com. I am getting really burned out about the intense amount of criticizing everything. Everybody's an expert, everybody's a critic, and everything sucks. And the one that's bugging me right now is saying that web apps or Electron apps, that's the one that really gets me, is Electron apps suck. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. Because first of all, it feels regressive. It feels, well, it feels like a straw man argument.
To be fair, they do suck, but they're better than having that same thing as a bookmark in your browser.
Fair enough. I think suck is not the right way to put it, because here's my core point. They can be a compromise. They can not do something as well. They can, but it's not the same thing as saying this is a dumb idea and it sucks. When you say that, that shuts down conversation. It sets up tribal. It sets up tribal talking points. Everybody draws their battle lines, and now these are the discussion points. Is this thing is a horrible idea, and you should feel bad for making it?
It's not bad. You're just making concessions.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And in return, you're enabling tens of thousands of more users of the Linux desktop because these things are available. You're making it possible for people to have a type of freedom that allows them to move between operating systems. That's an important type of user freedom that these applications are enabling. You're giving developers a common code base to work with where they can become an expert in something and still deliver an application to the desktop like we want. I admit these things are compromises. They're not perfect. But saying they suck... That has a eroding effect on the open source community. One of the core things about open source that we'd all agree with is it's full of people that are passionate, that have their own ish that they want to scratch. And when you shut down their ideas, when you tell them they should be ashamed for making something, this is a bad idea and it sucks, you're killing their enthusiasm. You're popping their bubble and you're reducing the amount that they're going to want to be involved with open source. And you're adding to the stereotype that the Linux community is toxic. It's contributing to that, and the worst part of it all is it's all just to drive clicks and reads and video views. That's really what the goal is. It's not to further the conversation. It's not to provide tough love, although it's often shrouded in that. It's often presented as if, well, I am deeply, deeply concerned about these things because the Linux desktop is so important to me that these things must be discussed. And this is my way of bringing these into the dialogue and having a conversation. That's bullshit. It's a way to get clicks. And what happens is it discourages participation in future open source endeavors. And it's a damn shame. And we already have enough problems. We already have applications that are great that are disappearing all the time. We have app fading constantly. And we got hit by a big one this week. Did either one of you guys happen to see that Nelaeus is announcing they're shutting down?
No.
I don't know if this – I mean, I'm just seeing this morning, but this is one of, you know, the most popular Electron apps on the Linux desktop, and there was a direct mail that was sent out by Nelaeus, and this is how it reads. I don't know what to make of this because it's not exactly clear, but – oh, man. Of course, this is a mail program I use, and, you know, these things come and go. It's kind of the nature of it, but here's what the email reads that they sent out to users. Unfortunately, we are no longer providing help support. Help what? We are no longer providing help support? They actually say that. We are no longer providing help support for Nelaeus Mail or N1. As a company, Nelaeus is focused on our API products to help other developers build email, calendar, and sync capabilities into their own applications. We will no longer provide help support. N1 and Nelaeus Mail will continue working just as they do today. We are not turning them off anytime in the foreseeable future. And if you have a subscription for N1 or Nelaeus Pro, which I do, those will continue to work. So if you're a developer or know developers interested in email or Electron applications, we encourage forks of the project.
So what they're saying is they're going to continue working on it, but they're not going to support it because they want third-party developers to do the work?
No, I feel like what they're saying is we're going to keep working on our backend and API, and is that how you read it, Mike?
Yeah, they want to be a platform for other developers to do all the messy work of like design and productization.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. How do they make money on that, or do they not?
Well, there is the Nelaeus Pro subscription. So there is a server component, which you could self-host, or you could use their Pro subscription. And it's nice because it synchronizes reads and it synchronizes metadata across all of the mail clients, across desktops. And there is, Nelaeus had a very unique and very aggressive, somewhat creepy, read receipt system where they would embed code in the email somewhere or something. They embedded something in the body of the email. It worked with even plain text email, so I don't know how they do this. And they would when you would open the email, it would trigger a ping on their Nelaeus Pro server. And then it sends a push notification to the desktop client that the user has opened your email. So it's more advanced than your traditional like Outlook read receipts. It's a server-based, server-side read receipt system, which worked really well and was actually kind of handy.
Right. So like HubSpot has a similar system,
right,
where you get read receipts when someone opens your emails.
These things come.
So you blame Electron for that. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think it's an interesting. It's because it's probably one of the most famous Electron apps on the Linux desktop. And most of the response has been extremely negative. This is one that was posted. Electron is a cancer and needs to die. And I think this type of dialogue, this supercharged dialogue, comes from these. This sucks. This is horrible. Like this hypercritical, everybody's an alpha dog. Everybody's the biggest geek in the room. And I am providing criticism because I'm so damn smart that I'm going to, and we have a culture of this now in the Linux community. And it feels like if I was a developer and I was creating an application where I was dependent on Electron, man, reading comments like that, I'd be like, fuck these Linux guys.
Meanwhile, outside of the Linux bubble, people are just using Electron apps every day.
They don't even know it's a conversation to be had, and they don't get it.
They don't even know that they're using Electron.
They don't care at all. Yeah.
Because the stuff just works, and it works well.
And it's cheap to develop, right? I mean, that's the primary thing. It's super inexpensive relative to developing, let's say, a Windows and Mac client for your business application.
Right.
Just to develop an Electron.
You'll be happy to know that while we were having that conversation, I just opened a bug on the JBot repo to look at making an Electron app.
Really?
Yep.
Nice.
I mean, you know, it's not that I'm like some, like, it's not like I want all my, I don't want all my apps Electron apps. In fact, on Coda Radio, I'm often the anti-web app guy.
Yeah.
I take that side of the argument, but I do see a very practical use for it just in enabling more people to use Linux, if nothing else, let alone the freedom of total OS portability you get between moving between all the major desktops.
Yeah.
That's valuable.
There's apps that are on Linux that wouldn't be on Linux if they weren't Electron.
And I'm willing to build a system with 32 or 64 gigs of RAM. Like it's not, this is not some precious commodity I can't compensate for.
Like Slack, the new Skype.
Yeah.
Discord.
Oh, yep. Yeah, and Atom is another. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a weird one because people love the crap out of Atom, but screw Electron.
Along that line, right, VS Code, Git Kraken. I mean, there's tons of developer tools that are just built on Electron.
Last week after the show, I decided to reach out to the Bozeman Lug to see if maybe we could meet up while Noah and I are out there in Bozeman, Montana. And I stopped by their IRC room and said, you know, hey, I'm going to be out there. I'd like to meet up with some people. And he said, oh, hey, yeah, Chris Lass. Yeah, in fact, I think you've done a show from Bozeman, Montana before. I said, yeah, I did. He's like, yeah, very good. Yeah, we go to, this is one of the guys that runs the Lug over there. He goes, we go to Linux Fest Northwest every year. Been doing it for like a decade. Well, I say to him, I say, no kidding. You know what? That is really cool. Next year, you should just stop by and say hi. And I'll tell you what, if you can come out with us, you can have a beer on me. And we often do like a barbecue here at the studio. And we have a whole bunch of people over and we cook and we give them some drinks and stuff like that. And a lot of people bring stuff too. So he says, Chris, you know, I would. But I find your persona really annoying. I said, oh, really?
That's like, so awesome.
So far, I agree with him.
He's like, yeah, you're a hipsterish, youngish, know-it-all. But he misspelled know-it-all. N-O, know-it-all.
Great.
It was especially bad when you had that Lunduke jackass as your co-host. You've become somewhat more tolerable since he's left, although I have to admit, I haven't watched or listened in a while. And then later he says, but you do have good content, so I can't keep away.
So he just, like, he just listens, like, to the shows you're not on.
I'm like, good enough. You know what? I'm happy with that. I'm good with that.
Well, that sounds like a Code Radio fan if I've heard
and
one.
And then we had a nice conversation, actually, after that. He talked about what they're doing out there. He talked about the university a little bit. And he put me in touch with somebody in Missoula who's working with a big VR setup on Linux. Just nice. Trying to just promote VR and all that. So, you know, there may be some fruit there. But it was sort of like, it was a very much like a bit of a reality slap. Like, I'm now talking to somebody who just doesn't really care for me. And that's fine. But I still would like to find out if there's Linux in that area, and I'd still like to tell that story.
See, the worst part is...
I don't give a shit, really.
People that don't know you think that you're putting on a persona. You're just being you. Ah, yes. So when they say they don't like your persona, they're just saying, screw you.
They don't like me. They don't like me. Yeah, I could totally understand that, though. I annoy myself.
But it often seems that once they meet you in person, they realize that you're actually a pretty cool guy.
That's almost always what happens. Like that chat conversation we had 15 minutes later, we're having a great conversation, yeah. And we're talking about all kinds of stuff. I think it's really you project a lot to people. You know, you get bits and pieces of them, but you obviously, you know, you don't know the version of me who's sitting on the toilet having the shits, right? Like, you don't know that version of me. You know the version of me that's talking to this microphone. And so you project a lot of other stuff onto me. And then when we meet in person, you realize, oh, yeah, he's a, you know, he's kind of a weird guy who's, you know, probably just a regular human being.
Kind of a Linux hipster.
Yeah, he's some sort of weird young Linux hipster who... So at what point do you not become young and hipsterish? Is it so it's not the gray hair, it's not owning multiple houses, it's not having three kids, it's not running my own business. Those things, what is it? At what point am I not a youngish hipster?
The youngishness comes as a byproduct of being a hipster. So as long as you maintain your hipsterness, you're young.
And I'm a hipster because I use Linux.
Yep.
So it's relative to the other person's age, is what I found.
Because he's presumably also a Linux user, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right. I have at the same conference been called a close-minded, grumpy old man and a know-it-all, stuck-up hipster, just like you.
Yeah.
And the difference was the guy who called me a know-it-all, basically a jerk kid, right, was in his 50s, mm-hmm. and the guy who called me a grumpy old man was in college.
Yeah, I've actually had that same thing happen to me. I've had somebody who is... much young, 20 years younger than me, to help call me an old man, and that I was being grumpy. Right. Yeah, that's funny.
And then the segment in between those two are your listeners.
And I wonder if, well, the demos that we have, it's a range of like 20s to 60s. I have in my RV to this day, I have a bag full of
wheat
badges. No, unfortunately, sadly, I do not. And if anybody would like to change that, I have a bag full of like military honors and badges. Like, I don't even know how to describe them. But it was an older gentleman who's like, who has served in Vietnam, and he's a listener of the shows, and he still listens to this day. And we met up in person, and he wanted me to have all this stuff. And I don't know what to like. What do you do with that? Like, this is something that this man has earned. And he wants to give it to me.
There's some serious shit attached to that.
And I'm like, he could easily be, you know, he's older than my father.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that. But he has no judgment attached to that. So I have to have a conversation with him that has no judgment. At first, I'm like, well, he's my elder. Like, I have to be like it totally changes the entire tone of the conversation. And then on top of that, he's served. Like, I feel like I am in no position to be receiving anything from this person. So then you have on the other end people who hold my age against me. I'm like, well, I'm only a few years away from 40 years old. Like, at what point do we? At what point am I no longer the young guy? And it's there's always going to be somebody older than me.
Yeah.
And I guess because I thought I was under the mistaken impression that I had to have flannel and I had to be using a MacBook to be a hipster. No. But I guess if I'm just
there's different kinds of hipsters too, because there's also the skinny jeans hipsters.
I would love to see.
So,
just want to.
So how come the Linux users itself aren't hipsters?
They are. They just don't want to admit it.
Oh,
I would say Linux
really?
Users aren't.
So they're hipsters because
BSD users are the ultimate hipsters.
They're hicksters because they're from the South.
Oh, that's good.
Or Canada, but whatever. Really? Yeah.
So using cutting edge technology and being outside the norm is what makes a hipster?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that fucking sucks.
Because to be a hipster,
it's not my fault that the norm uses shitty
stuff. To be a hipster, you have to use the good things before they were cool.
Yeah, but that sucks, man.
Mm-hmm.
So I get penalized for having good taste and good opinions, and I get lumped into with a hipster. Like, yep. So also, like, depending on who you're talking to, not only am I a hipster, but I'm a millennial too. Like, this is some shitty stuff for me. Like, I don't want either one of these labels.
Wait a minute. Okay. You don't seem that hipstery to me, right? And also, like...
Thank you. I don't think so either.
But I just want to say...
I mean, like, I'm not...
I'm the guy who has the vinyl record collection, but I'm also...
I don't know, you know. Right, this is the dude using Fish Shell on top of GNOME on Linux.
Yeah.
And I do own beard oil as well.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
what?
Okay. You're done.
Dude, if you're going to grow your beard out...
No.
And you're not eating a lot of dairy products.
No. And grab some of that Jupiter Broadcasting brand pomade.
No, I think you guys, I feel like this has gone too far. I reject.
Yeah, but who gives a fuck what people think?
I reject the category. I do.
Why?
Well, okay, I don't really, but for the sake of this conversation, I do, because it makes for interesting conversation.
Yeah, but then we can have a whole conversation about why.
Yeah, well, you know, like,
why should we care?
You know, like, I'm growing this hair out, and it looks bad. It looks bad, and you know, I realize that I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck what the person behind the counter thinks. I don't give a fuck what the people at the bank think. I don't give a fuck when I take pictures. Like, I don't care.
Yeah, I'm tired of quantifying myself based on what other people think of me, and I just want to live my life and enjoy it.
Yeah, and if you actually look at my responses in that thread, when he said that he finds me annoying and that I'm a hipster, I'm like, okay, that's fair. That's fine. I don't give a care. I don't give a fuck. Like, there's really no personal weight that I assign to this stuff, but I feel like we are throwing around terms and categories pretty loosely these days. He's a fascist. He's a hipster. He's a millennial. She's this. She's a social justice warrior. She's that, you know, like.
See, and all that's proven to me is that labels don't really fucking matter because the labels are going to change depending on who's saying it.
Well, and not only that, but the labels are going to change based on people's perceptions, based on when you change. Like, we as people are not static things.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. We have a new secret podcast. Don't tell anybody. But if you're a patron of the network at patreon.com/JupiterSignal, you can get the new podcast that is patron exclusive. It's just kicking off, and there's even a tasty RSS feed. Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. Thanks to everybody supporting this show, and thanks to everybody supporting the entire network.
So what are Mike's labels?
Use it. Chris, you have the bazooka. Use it.
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Mike's labels. Oh, you see, now you're making me turn the probe on Mike. That's not fair.
Isn't that what we do in the show? We probe people intensely?
Yeah, but that makes people like Mike really uncomfortable. There's your first one.
He's saying to do it.
There's label number one. Intelligent.
Savvy.
No, I'm not done.
But he's starting with the dick.
I'm making
sucking.
A sandwich here. I'm making a sandwich.
Yeah, I can feel the same.
Savvy. High strung.
Yes.
Fast to respond and react. Fluid. And also, I would say, an unconventional risk taker. So he's a play it safe kind of guy, except for in certain areas, he's willing to take risks that other people would consider radical. That would be my labels for Mike. And none of those, I think, are bad. Because when you're a small business owner, you're often high strung because there's so many damn things you're working on. And you have to be nimble. But it can make for a type of personality that can be easily casted in two ways, as brilliant and hardworking, but it also can be casted as a bit of a mess, as somebody who's a little chaotic and somebody who doesn't stick to their convictions for years. And, you know,
so now you're just reading YouTube comments. Okay.
Yeah. No, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing, is like that type of personality for the people that know you are able to recognize for what it is. But for the people who don't know you, it's easy to fill in a narrative that looks something different sometimes. And this happens to me too. There are people who think that my life is totally crazy and a mess. And there's other people who see my life as one big thing that's building to something else. And it's actually not crazy. It's not chaotic. And there's areas that are better and there's areas that are not great. And it's whatever narrative you're exposed to, you sort of fill in the missing pieces. And so for certain types of personalities, it's easier sometimes to be cynical and critical and fill in pieces that are less charitable to somebody. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I want to applaud you for not mentioning Republican or Vinyl Records. That's a surprising level.
Right. The Vinyl Records, I'm skeptical, but I have to admit I've never done an AB on the issue. But the Republican thing, honey, I'm just waiting for you to have that whole right-left paradigm shattered, and then you're going to be right there with me, and you'll be. I don't think it's going to take much of a leap for you.
Plus, you don't really come off as a Republican when compared to, say, someone like Noah, who is much, much more conservative than you are, I think.
That's because I'm from New Jersey.
Yeah. And he's from the Midwest.
Yeah. We're like Democrats who don't want to pay taxes, really. It's
pretty much
our whole thing. Yeah.
I don't actually, you know, so let's just take a second here. I wonder if in the 50-year, like, you know, way out there, we'll look back at this stuff and go, how silly was it that issues like net neutrality were chopped up to a right or left thing? Or how silly is it that healthcare is a right or left thing? Like, I think once we have some perspective and we're outside the bubble of our current couple of generations.
Once we founded the Federation.
Yeah, once Vulcans arrive on Earth and we found the Federation.
First of all, I'll be dead, but keep going.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, of course. I think we'll look back and realize there was sort of a paradigm that we all just bought into that wasn't. It was just sort of a fallacy. It was a creation of our own. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Linux Academy. Make your brain better. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Go there to sign up for a free 7-day trial and support the show. It's a platform to learn Linux. So if you're an expert but you need to fill in a few details, you want to learn a new platform or a programming language, consider Linux Academy. Go to linuxacademy.com/unplugged and sign up for a free 7-day trial. They have hands-on scenarios, the really good stuff that gives you confidence to work with things in the field. But really, it's like scenarios that are based on real-world stuff. This is nice because they have instructors who've worked out in the field who now work at Linux Academy full-time, and they're helping craft this content. And those instructors are available if you ever need help. Downloadable comprehensive study guides if you want to study offline. Android and iOS apps if you're commuting and you have connectivity and don't need to be watching the road or have a little downtime. Study guides, which are so helpful. And one of the things I'm most appreciative as a small business owner and a father is the availability planner. Depending on your availability, Linux Academy can help construct lesson plans around your goals, your course that you want to follow, and your availability. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Go there to sign up and get a free 7-day trial.
Can we talk about how Elon Musk is accelerating the Star Trek timeline?
I'm not buying the Elon Musk hype. I'm not buying the hype.
Yeah, I'm not buying the hype. Did you read the thing about his schedule?
You bunch of cynics.
You know, the thing is, you see one sort of smoke and mirror show, you've seen them all.
Are you talking about Steve Jobs now?
I mean, what other dude is put rockets into space?
Well, rockets into space is the computers in our garage of our era.
Okay. So can we just talk about the whole space thing for a second?
Yeah.
I just want to say, if we had, like, scaled for current economies and current inflation, things like that, the same investment that we had in, like, the late 60s, you know, early to mid 70s in NASA, Elon Musk, SpaceX, all that shit would not be so impressive.
Right.
Yeah, but
it's only because the
government
decided. Right. It's because our government decided, no.
Science isn't important.
That this, right. Like, that's really, if we had kept the pace. I mean, I don't want to be too, like, crazy. This is, you know, crazy Mike, but we probably would be, like, mining minerals out of asteroids now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unreasonable to think if we kept that level of funding. And, you know, and that would have been a profitable endeavor, one assumes, because people don't die from pollution if you do it on an asteroid, I think. Right? Like,
well, unless somebody maybe screws we'll up. Runs into the asteroid right. And heads towards Earth.
Well, it depends on the amount right. of fuel you expend coming up and down to collect those resources from the asteroid, I imagine.
Well, that's why you make moon base.
Yeah. If you can get your – if you can refuel in the moon base.
Yeah, then, well, because you can mine the hydrogen from the moon.
I'd love it.
You mine the hydrogen or you do nuclear power. I almost feel like – okay, we can stop me if I go too crazy. I almost feel like the major technology trends – and I'm going to quote Peter Thiel. So again, let the hate flow, YouTube. you know, they promised us flying cars and they gave us Twitter. Like, the technology trend somehow in 1983 hit the shithole.
I don't know.
And everything just stopped.
I heard on Twitter that somebody's coming up with flying cars.
Yeah, but like, it's not going, like, yeah. When they say they promised us flying cars, they mean it's like a society transformed by flying cars, new fuel sources, things like that, not like a car that can fly.
Yeah.
Well, and then government regulations get in the way.
And if you even take, just imagine the decades it will take for fully automated cars. Like, every car on the road is fully automated. Like, so flying cars are way off. I think part of it is sci-fi has misled us to a bit of a utopia. The reality is that it's all evolutionary. There's no huge, like, there's no Vulcans that land on the surface and all of a sudden teach us the ways of intergalactic travel. It's just not real. It's not how it works. It's all evolutionary.
You are so depressing.
No, that's just...
That's like super sad. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, look at the time period between the end of World War One and the beginning of World War II. Like, that was... Or just World War II itself. It was huge technological innovation. Granted, you know, not getting conquered by Germany is a reason to do that. But just decided to stop.
How about between the 90s and now?
I can't even have a conversation with you guys about this. This is ridiculous. Like, all three of us make our living doing something that literally did not exist 10 years ago.
Exactly.
The pace has not slowed down. It's just changed.
No, the pace has accelerated.
Yeah, I'm not being a pessimist.
I'm talking major, major foundational science, not, you know, new applications for existing computing technology, right?
Well,
how about the fact that the internet didn't exist 30 years ago and now it's powering the world pretty much?
Yeah, I guess, what about AI? What about machine learning? What about virtual reality? What about augmented reality? What about...
I think we're getting back on track, right? I thought Zencastr crashed again.
So are you implying that something came along and just slowed shit down for a while? Because I could subscribe to that, but I wouldn't blame any one particular thing.
I'd blame Reagan, but we can talk about that later.
Well, I would actually, you know what? I lie. If I was going to blame one thing, I'd blame the telcos.
I blame the telcos, and I'd blame the government.
For regulations? Mr. Liberal?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You're going to say regulations?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're going to make Bernie Sanders cry. I'm sorry, what?
Well, no, I think regulations make sense in certain ways, but in other ways they don't. Like, I think that the telcos definitely need to be regulated because they were abusing the lack of regulation, but
they still are, right? I mean,
I've experienced, just as a quick deviation to just bring it back to a 2017 issue. I've talked about it before on the show. I have an inactive Verizon MiFi that I can call up and say, "Hey, turn this on." I've got a Ting CDMA and a Ting GSM MiFi. I've got two MiFis from Ting, one that they provided, one that I pay for, full disclosure. And then I've got an AT&T grandfathered MiFi. I've talked about this before on the show. And the AT&T grandfathered MiFi is unlimited flat rate. And so So this is why it's been my default until recently. What's happened is after 22 gigabytes, which when you pretty much consume everything and your work exists online, happens within the first few days. After 22 gigabytes, they throttle you whenever the network in your area is busy. I mentioned this before. So my hack has been, because it is bad, like the throttling, I was like, okay, well, let's see how the throttle, it's dial-up. It's like dial-up. The only thing I can do, and I have literally done this, is I have moved Lady Jupes to an area that is less populated, that just simply doesn't have as busy of an AT&T network, and now I have an 8 megabit connection again.
Did you say you had a Verizon one too?
Yeah, it's inactive.
Expect that to go away soon.
You think?
Because they are literally forcing people off of the unlimited plans now.
Yeah, I'm going to try to pick.
Like, I have a friend that lives in rural Missouri. And the only high-speed access she has is via her Verizon MiFi, and they are forcing her off of it.
So?
They're ending her plan. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're ending her plan. And so she's going to have no internet access now.
Yeah, yeah. So this is what I think has been a drag to some degree on the pace of technological evolution. Like, I am disappointed that I go to places to buy goods and that they have implemented NFC, but they don't have phone payments. Or I go somewhere and they don't have a website with their hours posted. Like, we are not keeping – humans are not keeping up with the pace of technology. And then when you combine commercial interests where they make a large investment in, say, like a network, like a telco would,
mm-hmm.
they make a large investment and then they try to extend that investment as long as they possibly can. So they do things like introduce artificial caps and throttling to avoid reinvesting in their infrastructure.
Yeah.
So they can milk it for a few years and then invest in the next big technology.
Which they usually don't.
And I understand. Well, typically.
Right.
And I think that has caused a huge drag. I really think that has slowed things down.
So there's a couple problems with that argument. One, no telco, to my knowledge, in the last 20 years has made any major investment. In fact, Verizon Fios, the subsidiary of Verizon in New York, was being sued a year and a half ago. You know this, Chris. I think you covered it in Unfilter. For taking a bunch of tax subsidies from the state and the city of New York to basically lay fiber in the whole city and not doing it. Like, they did part of it.
Same thing
and then
happened
just
here in Washington. They did it partially. They did a partial rollout here in Washington.
Right, and they decided not to. And they went in front of, I think they ended up in front of Congress actually and said, well, our shareholders punished us. But
yep.
It's not an investment.
And you know what they did to get out of it? Their ninja move to so they took the tax subsidies,
right.
they didn't roll out the fiber, and then their ninja move to get out of the whole damn mess, they just sold the whole division off.
Right.
To individual local Frontier here in Washington.
Right. They sold over in Maine, it was Fairpoint.
Yeah. And so they just they took the money and then they got out of the game and they sold off all, and now it's Frontier's problem to maintain the Fios network here in Washington.
So let me lose my R credentials here and say the simple solution to this problem is a federalized utility.
Oh.
That's it.
I got nothing for this. I mean, I would like that along with if you could sort of common carrier infrastructure, like here's the backbone, it's super fast, it's getting updated every year, and then you could sell on top of it.
Isn't that what municipal ISPs are doing?
When they're aggressively being blocked by Verizon in particular.
Exactly, right. Because they see them as actual competition that wants to have good infrastructure.
It's sick though. I'm doing this move we've talked about before, and most counties that I'm looking to move to, now that I don't have a freaking house, simply have one ISP. And we're not talking like fiber here. We're talking copper. We're talking
DSL, 3 megabits.
3 DSL, or maybe if I'm lucky, it's the equivalent of Comcast or Cablevision, right? So mm-hmm. like, I know there's a subsidiary down there. That is the best I'm going to do. There is virtually no fiber optics available unless you're
going to get that
in Tampa.
The AT&T U-verse?
No, I'm going to get freaking Comcast. It's going to make me crazy because they like – I don't even want to get into it. Me and Comcast are not friends. I like to run
– I was having this conversation.
Yeah.
I was having a similar conversation last night with Angela about this, and I was saying like it feels like these caps and these throttles – and these trying to get you off the unlimited plans are definitely like a 2017, 2020 problem. But long term, none of these large monopolies or duopolies, even outside the U.S., are really investing in their core infrastructure, their core switch technology, the wiring, the curb service. Yeah, it's sort of stagnant. And so to me, it seems like the only area left for radical innovation is the airwaves, something that's detached from physical infrastructure.
See, I don't agree with that. Like, I think that there are ISPs like over in the Nordic countries and over in Asia that are investing heavily.
Right, it's a government issue here.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, that is true. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, but those are those are more government efforts, aren't they?
Yeah.
Don't get your hopes up in the airways. I just literally 2 days ago bought unlimited hotspot for my iPad on T-Mobile, and they tried to do a network upgrade today, and their network was down since 4 a.m. till roughly right.
Yeah, and by the way, I think that unlimited means they're gonna re-encode video and audio.
They compress anything that they like. Skype, I noticed they're compressing GoToMeeting, Citrix, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, why do the people accept this? I guess would be my question, right? Why not? Like the new FCC guy is going to not only not do Title II, but he's going to completely roll back the regulations.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we're too busy investing in our tribes to to worry about the actual issues.
We're super divided. The people aren't, and then the vast majority aren't informed about the issues. And then, of course, we have a bit of, admittedly, we have a real horse in this race because we're creating content that is being distributed on these networks. And then in terms of what's being sold, speaking of T-Mobile is sort of at the front lines of really fucking us over because you got a guy up there with a leather jacket and a pink shirt, and he's telling you that they're going to give you Netflix and YouTube and Spotify and Apple Play Music for free. And it's great. This is a good thing.
But it's okay, Chris. They'll give you the rest on your unlimited data as well, but they just won't tell you that they're compressing it and making the quality worse first.
Right. Right. Yeah. But the problem is it makes YouTube free and it makes JupiterBroadcasting.com not free.
Well, and it makes Apple Music.
Or it makes it a reduced experience.
Free. Caveat.
Yeah.
And so it's reverse net neutrality. It's the reverse of net. It is being packaged up as a feature of a plan when in reality it is giving special treatment to certain types of data. And it is giving reduced treatment, I don't know what the right word would be for that, but it is given a degraded experience for other types of content.
Yeah.
And this is how it starts.
They're not doing the pay lanes. They're just doing a free lane and then a crabbier free lane.
And this seems to be how it starts. Now, we're going to just, go off on the deep end here. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen, but let's just take it to its logical extreme, say, 20 years from now. There's not going to be a space for a scale engine. There's not going to be a space for a Jupiter Broadcasting to just do an HTML5 embed of a video and serve it off of a CDN that isn't owned by somebody running on AWS.
Google, Amazon, yeah.
Yeah. And that's where this is going. And so independent media is going to become more and more audio-based in this reality because that's the least... Like you can still afford to distribute a 64 kilobyte mono MP3 file.
You can even look at it in terms of other industries. It might make like stuff like DigitalOcean a less attractive offer because you're not you don't have the backing of the Amazon CDN that gets the increased throughput.
That would be devastating. Yeah. I mean, for my business, it's in theory, let's say level 3, right? Let's go one step up from the last mile carriers and say level 3 decided that Dio was a non-favored son. Right. So then AWS would be faster.
Yep.
I'd have tons of clients saying, well, you're partnered with Dio and your competitor is partnered with AWS. So, we're going to do that because here's the throughput statistic.
And there's already signs that ISPs are willing to do that stuff. Like Verizon was throttling Netflix and they're huge.
And it doesn't have to even be a regulation or a monopoly thing. In some ways, user discovery paths also force the issue. So a discovery path is you create a way for somebody to consume your content or somebody to use your application, but the users find their own path and they do. And so I think about how content is going to be consumed by people in the future, and platforms like YouTube in this sort of new reality are going to thrive.
Yeah, they're
going to
be favored.
They're going to become even more important. They're going to become even more dominant. And so you'll have, we either distribute via YouTube or we distribute via iTunes or we have a small little file you can grab from our website.
Yeah. Well, why would you want to go and consume it any other way when you're going to get a higher quality version of it on those services?
But I feel like the reality is like that already because a lot of times for our very own shows, users... The discovery path for our users has been they'll either grab the MP3 if they want the offline, listen on your own terms version, or they'll watch on YouTube.
Yeah.
And way more people, even though we distribute on both, prefer the MP3. And I guess my point to that is as more and more platforms like iTunes start to offer statistics and Stitcher and Google Play and YouTube, like there's a lot of market forces. It's bandwidth and distribution agreements, but it's also tracking and data. Like there's a lot of stuff that's pushing the internet into silos, that's pushing it into platforms that offer information to advertisers and content creators and do the hosting for you and make the pairing agreements. It's all going that direction, and you can kind of see it. You can kind of see it in history too. Like if you go back to radio really started as a way for farmers to talk to each other, and legitimately, the radio's original broadcast antennas would be barbed wire fences of farmers. And they would broadcast to other farmers to talk about what was going on, the weather, things like that. It was a community technology used by the users, built by the users, fucking hooked up to their barbed wire fucking fences or whatever they were back then. Like, really basic bitch stuff. And now you got Ryan Seacrest making $30 million doing the top 50 songs across a, you know, 300 radio station market. It's a totally different ballgame.
On the other hand, this does kind of seem like a cyclical thing with, like, communication. First you had radio and then television mm-hmm. and then the internet. Do you think there's going to be something that replaces the internet?
Well, that's why I was saying the airwaves. That's why I was saying, like, that's sort of the you can't completely own the airwaves. There's public space in there that's carved out for the public. There is just – there's the
– For now.
You don't have to have physical infrastructure. You don't have to have fiber in the ground.
I mean, technically you can't take away the airwaves, but you can regulate such that you're not able to use them without being in fear of being arrested.
You do need physical infrastructure though, right? On a mass scale, you actually need things like towers and repeaters.
Well, you need repeaters. I don't know if you need towers.
Okay, even if you just – you're talking like ad hoc then.
Well –
mesh airwaves.
It's like really mesh, getting. Yeah, like a, I mean, I know. I mean, I'm just saying. Like, I'm saying, like, this is a possibility. I'm not saying this is going to happen. But we are really at a point now where we all have devices in our pockets that have Wi-Fi radios and Bluetooth, and they have GPS. They have the ability to know where they are. They have the ability to communicate with each other. And in the case of iOS, for now, two versions of iOS, there is mesh networking built into iOS, and there's mesh networking technologies available for Android today. It just has to be turned on and used. The technology, the platform frameworks and APIs exist already.
It just doesn't seem like something that's going to really go mainstream, right? Because it's not in the interest of any of the incumbent players for that to happen.
That, and even if it did, the problem with mesh is that you need a certain population density. So what are the rural people going to do?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, drones, balloons. I mean, this is way out there. This is like way out there stuff, but... This is moonshot stuff, but if it gets to the point where people like us can't distribute content, I feel like then that almost invites the birth of the next wave of communication. Like it's happened with print, it's happened with radio, it happened with television, and now it's happening with the internet. Like it comes like once it gets completely locked down and controlled. Usually something else is created by humanity to collaborate and share. And it's hailed as the next revolutionary way for all of the Earth to connect. And it eventually gets locked down by certain commercial interests. And once that cycle completes itself, something else comes along. There's some great books about this. I mean, I am not making this up. I wish I was this insightful, but this is my take based on reading many books about it. Right. I will give I think it's called The Switch by Tim Wu. Is that what it is? Tim Wu. I can't remember. Anyways, it's really there's a lot of good books on
the Master Switch.
The Master Switch. Yes, thank you. The Master Switch by Tim Wu from 2010 is a great place to start. And then there's a bunch of other great books that I sort of branched off from there. You know what? I'm gonna put it in the show notes because I just found I listened to it on Audible and it was worth every single credit that I spent on it. But
see, you can get I'm it, much less hopeful. Yeah, I'm much less hopeful in the cyclical theory, only because there isn't, you know, DARPA.
Yeah, but DARPA had their own interest for creating the internet.
We're not going to solve this problem today on the show. Let's be honest. I mean, despite how much we might all have a little bit of investment here and some passion here, we're not going to solve the problem. I would like to hear what the audience thinks. Leave your comment. Let us know. Go over to jupiterbroadcasting.com/contact or leave a comment wherever you watch this. Mike, I wish you the best of luck on the big transition coming up. Good luck,
yes,
sir.
Thank you.
And where should people find you online? Give a little pluggies.
At Dumanoku on Twitter or at Buccaneer.io.
Ooh, nice little plug skis. Yep, very, very good. Very good, very good. And you can follow the network at Jupiter Signal and check out past episodes of User Air and grab future episodes by subscribing to our RSS feed, JupiterBroadcasting.com. Has it all.
And come visit me on Twitch, RickILP on Twitch.
Nice, dude. Nice.